Hello and welcome back to the Paxton and Whitfield podcast, a cheese-filled podcast brought to you by London's oldest cheesemongers. My name is Dan and I'm now the cheese buyer for Paxton and Whitfield. When we sat down and planned this year's calendar of topics in January, as with other years, July tends to be a month we focus on French cheese in our shops, and so it seemed a great time to look at a famous French cheese for our podcast too. With Bastille Day on the 14th of July, it's always a wonderful opportunity to explore the delicious cheeses of our neighbours across the Channel. In this episode, I wanted to delve a little deeper into one of my favourite blues, and one of France's most famous cheeses, Roquefort. Before I jump in though, I thought it would be worth taking a look at the current situation within the French dairy industry. Thanks to fantastic initiatives like the British Cheese Weekender, organised by the Academy of Cheese and the Specialist Cheesemakers Association, the need to champion and support British cheesemakers has been shouted from the rooftops. And I wanted to find out if similar campaigns had been happening in France, a country famous for its fromage. Whilst it is to an extent stereotyping, I think it's fair to say that cheese is ingrained in the culture of France. Having cheese at a meal is the norm rather than a special occasion, and you only have to walk through a French market to see the numerous stalls all selling different varieties of cheeses, but with enough custom to support them all. However, with restaurants, school canteens, markets, and many supermarket cheese counters closed during the lockdown, speciality cheeses have been pushed aside in favour of more basic foodstuffs. Producers of soft cheeses, such as Reblochon, Saint-Nectaire, Munster, Brie de Meaux, have been hit by a 60% drop in sales, amounting to a loss of €157 million of business, according to the France Terre de Lait, the French dairy industry. Coronavirus broke out in Europe during the seasonal peak of European milk production, a time when cheesemakers would be producing high volumes of amazing cheeses, thanks to the abundance of high-quality spring milk. But as the drop in demand for high-value cheeses dropped significantly, farmers turned to other dairy products and began to create a glut of more storable dairy products, such as butter and milk powder. In an effort to support cheesemakers, the European Commission decided to pay farmers to temporarily store over 18,000 tonnes of cheese, in order to keep it from flooding the market during the crisis, and in turn preventing more food waste at the point of sale. Brussels also announced private storage aid for butter and skimmed milk powder for producers who'd gone down that route. However, some farmers called for the EU to pay them to reduce production, arguing that stockpiling cheeses would only delay the oversupply problem. The European Milk Lobby described the EU's storage measures as wrong, coordinating protests in 8 EU countries, including France and Belgium, by dumping milk powder in fields, while still respecting the lockdown provisions in their respective countries. Interestingly, protected cheeses like Salsa Chair, a small ashed goat's milk cheese hailing from the Loire, have been temporarily granted dispensation from the French government to bend the rules of their PDO, particularly with regards to age profiles and maturing times and conditions. It's a story echoed in the UK, where makers have significantly reduced the temperatures that they are storing and maturing cheeses in order to slow them down. Michel Lacoste, president of the National Council for Milk Product Appellation, a group of producers of the 45 cheeses that are protected by the EU's geographical indication label, and a dairy farmer himself whose milk is used to make Cantal cheese, has said, "We have to turn to home-produced products to keep jobs going. We have to save the diversity, this cheese heritage, which is an international symbol of France. It is not difficult to help us. Just eat cheese." You may have spotted the social media campaigns with the hashtag Fromagissons, a portmanteau of fromage, and the French for Let's Act, a call to arms for the French nation to come together and eat more artisan cheese. Whilst the initial crisis, both in the UK and France, hit soft cheesemakers most quickly, with much of the stock hitting the end of shelf lives and facing wastage, there is of course a knock-on effect for all makers. Hard cheese and longer-aged cheese producers were quickly running out of space to store cheese, the reality of farmhouse cheese production being that your animals still need milking each day, and that milk needs to go somewhere to stop it going down the drain. Some cheesemakers pivoted, putting their efforts into hard cheese makes where they would usually make soft, I think the reality with some cheeses is that we're going to see much higher age profiles of cheeses on our counters. France's most consumed cheese is Comté, and with demand dropping for export during lockdown, there are potentially going to be more cheeses available come Christmas after much sought-after high age profiles. Roquefort, interestingly France's second most consumed cheese, with around 3 million cheeses produced each year, is a cheese where maturation is often slowed down in order to meet demand. This is due to the seasonal nature of sheep's milk production. So, that brings us neatly onto this month's focused cheese, Roquefort. Bright white in paste, with distinctive mould veins that are more green in hue than blue, Roquefort is a pronounced ewe's milk cheese, often with a forward saltiness. There are currently only 7 producers of Roquefort, despite its huge levels of consumption and fame across the world. In much the same way that all blues in the UK are sometimes incorrectly labelled as Stilton, Roquefort is not a catch-all for all French blues. The largest volume producer, by far, is the Société des Caves de Roquefort, who are a subsidiary of Lactalis, a behemoth of cheesemaking, a multinational who produce cheeses in 55 countries, employ over 80,000 people, and are behind brands such as Galbani and Presidon. They hold several caves, which are open to tourists, and account for over 60% of all Roquefort production. Roquefort Papillon, another well-known brand, is second to the Society, and has various levels of cheese to appeal to different sectors in the cheese industry, from export to deli counter to supermarket. They began in 1906, and Albert Alric, the founder, revolutionised the method in which mould could be introduced to the curd by inventing a machine that brushed in the spores. Papillon cheeses tend to be more open textured than other brands. The remaining 5 other producers, each holding only 1 cave, are Carl, Gabriel Coulet, Fromagerie Occitane, Vernier, and finally Le Vieux Bergère, the producer we work with at Paxton's. So let's talk a little bit more about those caves. A series of earthquakes and landslides in the Combadou Plateau millions of years ago created this unique site with natural faults called fleurines, sort of chimney-shaped, which are essential to the development of the cheeses as they mature in the caves. They ensure that the temperature and humidity remain constant throughout the year, because where the temperature outside the cave is higher, the faults draw air inwards and downwards, and when the temperature rises in the caves, the air is drawn upwards and outwards. The region's climate is extreme, with hot, dry summers and cold winters, which particularly suit the hardy Lacaune sheep. Cheesemongers will often say that we're trying to emulate the condition of these caves in our maturing rooms, with constant temperatures and humidity. Young Roquefort tend to be fairly firm in texture and have a mildly metallic taste, which is evident over the sweet quality of the ewe's milk, with a little bit of bite from the blue veining. With age, the Roquefort takes on a creamier consistency and the blue veins reach right to the edge of the cheese. Our cheeses, at Paxton Whitfield, tend to be aged for at least 9 months, the flavour being much stronger and spicier, open, sweet and rich. Personally, I think they're best paired with something with sweetness, the classic being a Sauterne, a noble rot dessert wine where the grapes have been allowed to shrivel on the vine. Personally, my absolute favourite, however, would be a Hungarian dessert wine, also a noble rot, called a Tokaj. Interestingly, the mould that gives the cheeses the distinctive characteristics, Penicillium roqueforti, and arguably the mother mould for all blue cheese, can be found in the soil and growing on the walls of the caves, such as the symbiotic nature between the cheese and the caves. There is a well-told legend around Roquefort that you will often hear a cheesemonger wax lyrically on at an event or over the counter. It is said that there was once a young shepherd boy who was sat at the mouth of a cave eating his lunch of bread and cheese, whilst watching over his flock. When along came a shepherdess, who caught the young man's eye, and he abandoned his lunch, and presumably his animals, only to return days, weeks, or perhaps months later, depending on which story you've heard, to find that his cheese had turned blue. He tried this blue cheese, and having grown up with a younger brother, I do at least recognise this is possible, and discovered it to be delicious. Whilst a little romantic but highly unlikely tale, there is at least one nugget of truth in this story. The mould, Penicillium roqueforti, is grown on bread, and there are wonderful examples of the smaller producers having their own bread ovens and bakeries with secret recipes in order to create the specific strains for their roquefort. Although now, of course, larger producers will use much more reliable lab-grown versions. There are 7 key elements of the Roquefort PDO. Interestingly, the first cheese, let alone French cheese, to be granted the protection in 1925. Number 1, all milk used must be delivered at least 20 days after lambing has taken place. Number 2, the sheep, specifically of the Lacaume breed, must be on pasture wherever possible, i.e. out on the grass, in an area including most of Aveyron in the south of France and parts of the neighbouring département. At least 75% of any grain or fodder must come from the local area. Prior to 1925 and the protection, the cheese was often made with cow's or goat's milk or even a mixture of milks dependent on the season. Number 3. The milk must be whole, raw, i.e. not heated above 35 degrees centigrade, and unfiltered. Number 4, the addition of rennet must occur within 48 hours of milking. Number 5, the Penicillium roqueforti used in the production must be produced in France and come from the natural caves of Roquefort. Number 6, the salting process must be performed using dry salt, so no brine. And number 7, the whole process of maturation, cutting, packing, and refrigeration of the cheese must take place in the specific commune of Roquefort-sur-Soulzon. The cheese is really quite key not only to the dairy culture in France, but in fact has notable mentions throughout history. Its protection dates back much further than 1925. On the 4th of June in 1411, Charles VI granted a monopoly for the ripening of the cheese to the people of Roquefort-sur-Soulzon, as they had been doing it for centuries. The industry is vital to this relatively rural area of southern France and employs over 4,500 people locally. Much like all artisan cheeses from the UK and all over the world, it is vital that we continue to support and protect these century-old traditions. Okay, so one thing that I've really been missing during lockdown is the ability, or the opportunity rather, to talk to people about cheese and have that really lovely interactivity where you try a piece of cheese together. So I'm now going to try some Roquefort, and hopefully you have some Roquefort at home and we can have a little look at how it tastes and the texture and the smell. So first off, the smell. It's got a really lovely milkiness to it, I think, on the nose. A sweetness and a really definite pronounced saltiness. Texture wise in my hands, it's soft, really quite moist. Blue cheeses from France often tend to be very moist, and when they're wrapped have sort of an extra layer of cushioning in the foil to really help lock in some of that moisture. Whilst lots of blue cheeses are ironed, and some Roquefort producers do iron, I know that ours tends not to, and matures their cheese for as long as they can, as the whole moon. You're unlikely to ever see a Roquefort as a full circle. It's pretty much exclusively sold in half moons, and that's to allow the cheese to age for as long as possible before you really cut into it, because as soon as you cut into soft cheeses, sort of their maturing stops. So let's have a little play. Really soft, sort of breaks apart very, very easily. The paste is bright white, and the bluing is, as I've said earlier, much more green. And because the cheese is much softer, you don't see the sort of the spiral, I suppose, of blue mold. It sort of pockets more in circles, as opposed to a Stilton, which would sort of spider web out. But I suppose that's also because traditionally we would cut a Stilton horizontally, whereas you would cut a Roquefort
vertically, so you don't see the same pattern or marbling in the blue. And the white paste is thanks to the sheep's milk, of course. So it's got a lovely creamy texture, but there is a little, there's still a little give there. There's still, and partly thanks to the saltiness and partly thanks to the age, there's a little grittiness, a really pleasant sort of crunch there, which yields to this really lovely, rich, fatty, creamy cheese. Not creamy in the sense that it tastes like cream, but texturally creamy. It's all black pepper and salt on the front, and that sort of yields away something which is much more delicate. There are some very definite sort of herb, green herb notes in there. Maybe thyme. And something quite floral as well, something quite floral and sweet. But I think it's the saline for me that's really coming through, makes me think of sort of the seaside. And this batch, I guess it's because of the sheep's milk, there's almost sort of a feta quality to it. It's really delicious. And I think pairing wise, it needs something sweet to counterbalance that saltiness. There isn't any bitterness going on in the piece I have, although I wouldn't be surprised if some cheeses had a little bitterness on the end. And there is some umami flavour. There's a little bit of mushroom coming through from the blue. And personally, I would want to pair this at the moment with something fresh and sweet. Some fresh fruit perhaps would be delicious, maybe some fresh cherries. Classic wine pairings, as we discussed, would be Sauternes or my favourite Tokaj, but I think this would also work brilliantly with a beer with some more heft to it. A stout or a porter are always classic pairings for a salty blue like this.
If this has whetted your appetite and you would like to try our delicious raw milk traditional Roquefort, you can find it on our online cheese counter at paxtonandwhitfield.co.uk or in one of our shops. Be sure to check the Visit Us section to find out more about our new opening times and days. I would also highly recommend the Australian cheese expert Will Studd's documentary about Roquefort and the fascinating tribulations that led to him having to bury a pile of Roquefort after a row with the Australian government. Finally, I want to say a massive thank you to all of you for your support. Thank you for continuing to support us and the many artisan cheesemakers we work with. And thank you for tuning in again. If you would like to join the conversation, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Paxton's Cheese. Thank you.